take a couple minutes to talk to you about the meeting tomorrow and about your schedule, upcoming schedule for the next few weeks. There's materials that are close to the edge here, far away from you, there should be a pile of materials here. And what you should have in this pile is, first of all, parking directions for those of you who are planning to drive tomorrow to Portland State. And for those of you who are planning to take the shuttle, there's some information about the shuttle. Again, if you are taking the shuttle, please be downstairs at 3 o'clock because we're on a very tight schedule and we need to make sure people are there at 4. For those of you who are driving, the tour at Portland State, which is leaving at 4, needs to leave pretty much right on time because they have a very tight schedule. So if you're unable to get there by 4, you might want to consider just trying to make the 4:30 informational meeting. There's also a schedule agenda, and I hope this isn't confusing because you already also have today's agenda, but we put out an agenda for tomorrow as well that sort of shows you what's lined up for tomorrow at Portland State, beginning at 4 o'clock with the field trip that goes to 4:30, and then beginning with the informational meeting at 4:30, which continues on until 7. The final thing is, we've also, for your convenience, distributed at the bottom of this pile of material that you're looking at a three-week schedule, a tentative schedule of what's coming up. Just a couple things to note is that starting on Monday, if you actually start getting into the education budgets, the first one will be OHSU. This is what their presentation binder looks like, and we will be distributing it to your offices on Thursday.
That's so. Only one of the many binders you will get on OHSU, Mr. Bender, though. Please don't mislead anyone.
It's the only one I know of so far. if there aren't any questions, or if there are any questions, please.
No, that's the question. Is the schedule going to take us through public hearings on all of the agencies that we have jurisdiction over, and then work sessions will be scheduled at some time in the future?
That is the current work plan, and for the period that you see here, there will be no work sessions. These are all public hearings. Next week on OHSU, and the following week on the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Thank you.
And there is a Friday meeting on the 9th. We've already notified your offices. This, of course, is not a typical meeting time. Friday meeting will be for immediately following the full Ways and Means Committee meeting. So it will be in the morning, probably starting around 9 o'clock or so, to help catch up with some things and keep you on track.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator Bibb. And Senator Walker, on that Friday meeting, Senator Deckard wanted a Saturday night meeting, and I said, no, absolutely not. What are we going to do on Friday? So. Senator Walker, did you
Yes, would you please tell me what the estimated drive time is to the location in Portland, going the standard speed limit, assuming no traffic?
I don't think I've ever gone the standard speed limit. I believe that we are planning to leave at 3 o'clock from the Capitol, okay. Hoping to get there by 4. So I would give yourself an hour minimum.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's say 52 minutes to an hour and a half.
Okay. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 426A. Thank you very much, Mr. Bender. And just to give you kind of an overview of what we're going to do today, public testimony until 3:45. And my hope is to get everyone on this list. And that means that people have to be as concise as possible. And if there's somebody else signed up and you are either affiliated with them and you feel like as if you have similar views, if you can come up at the same time, that would be great. So we'll go until 3:45, and then we're going to have a work session on the bill. So 3-4 minutes testimony, I think, is pretty much what we're talking about here. So with that, I'm going to call up Dr. Francis, is it Charbonnier? From the McMinnville School Board, and it says also TSPC Commissioner and OSBA Board. And please state your name for the record. I see you have written testimony as well. Appreciate that. And then following that, I have sort of on deck, if I can use the baseball metaphor, Sue McGrory. So after, okay.
Please, thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Gazilio, and members of the committee. My name is Francis Charbonnier. I'm currently the chair of the McMinnville School Board. I first got on that board in 1970, a few years ago, and I've served a total of 27 years on that board, and I've also had other activities since I'm a commissioner at TSPC. I spent a lot of time. I retired from Hewlett-Packard about 12 years ago, and I've been spending a lot of my time in education since then. And I've always strived, over during all these years, being on the board, to try to have a compromise where we can offer all of our employees good health insurance benefits, at the same time trying to control the costs so that we do not divert excessive funds from in our budget to benefits and take them away from the classroom. And so that's always been a struggle. I think we've been reasonably successful. The reason why you're considering this bill is that you're very concerned about the fact that healthcare costs are increasing and premiums for insurance are increasing at a rate which is not sustainable. I couldn't agree more, and I thought I would, at the beginning of my testimony, I would like to do two things. I would like to give you an indication of how that bill would impact our own district and respond to some of the comments that have been made at two previous hearings, one in the Senate committee and the other one last week. Okay, and so just very briefly for our district, I've looked at the last 13 years, from 1994 to 2007. And briefly, the premiums, insurance premiums, have more than tripled in those 13 years. Our total health insurance costs have more than quadrupled, and they have increased at a rate of 12% per year for 13 years going. And now the health insurance is 12% of our budget, when 13 years ago it was only 6%. And so obviously this puts us in a difficult position, it's been a strain on our budget, and so I have experienced personally the thing that concerns all of us, which is again the fact that healthcare costs, which are now $2.3 trillion, for the United States as a whole, and insurance premiums are going at a rate which is not sustainable. And so you have been sharing the same concern. You believe that Senate Bill 426 would help in reducing health care costs and maybe also reducing the rate of further increases. And I beg to differ, and I would like to give you a number of reasons why I think this is not the case, and in fact it might have the opposite effect. One of the things that I might mention, is because that's been the main argument of the proponents, is that famous Michigan study. And if you look at the Michigan study, it took a group of employees, school employees, where the average premium or health insurance cost was $15,000 a year, and they thought that by going to a statewide pool they could reduce it 6.71% to $14,000 a year. And actually when you look at the way that this reduction of 6.7% would be achieved, 40% of that was by going to a self-insured system, and 36% of that was something that could be considered a reduction of benefits or reallocation of benefits. So actually the administrative fee savings that were projected in that study were only 2%, which is 2% of the 0.1%, which is 2% of the 6.7%. So based on this, then unless we were prepared to do the same things, go to a self-insured model and to change benefits, then we could not expect to achieve here the same results that were achieved or projected, because that study was never implemented. I could mention the Ohio study, but I think all it has been done before, and so I'll go beyond that to the next subject, which our next reason, and we talk about economies of scale. And this is true that small groups find difficulty in getting affordable insurance, because they're high administrative groups, administrative costs are larger, and also the there's more in experience-based premium rates. Of course, in a small group, you have much larger fluctuations in your experience and much fluctuation. Okay. And, but, you know, the OSBA covers 37,000 people. And the Fed covers 45,000 people. These are very, very similar. And in fact, the premium cost and the administrative cost are very, very similar for the two. They're only 0.1% apart. And therefore, we can say that both pools, the PEBB, or OEBB if it exists, if it's created, or OSBA, all benefit from these economies of scale, and there's no significant difference. Now, the on the rate of cost increase, and this is something that really impresses me, in 2001, OSBA and PEB had about the same premium rate that was $472 per month. And since then, in 2005, 4 years later, OSBA rates had increased 55%, but PEBB rates had increased 74%. So they had increased significantly more rapidly. In the last 2 years, I don't have data for PEBB, but for OSBA, the increase has only been 3% for the 2 years. And so as a result of this, then you can say historically that the premium costs have increased much faster for PEBB than they have for OSBA.
So, Dr. Charbonnet, this has been about 6 minutes, and so I'd appreciate if you'd wrap it up.
Let me just
give me the bottom line.
I'll wind up by saying this, that now looking, we made a detailed study and concluded that the cost of going from OSBA to PEBB, and these are OSBA figures, would be $99 million statewide. That's an interesting number. I'm also concerned of what it does to my district. And the estimate, the best estimate that I could make with the help of OSBA is that my district, the cost would increase $975,000. Now, you know, this is 2% of our total budget, but if you express it in terms of, with that money, we're losing 15 teachers. We're losing 15 teachers. Since we have 250 classroom teachers, that means that our class size would increase 6%. And so, therefore, I would see that as a very adverse consequences for us. So I would urge you to, not implement that bill, because I don't think it is going to achieve the effect that you desire. And if I cannot convince you, not to pursue that bill, I would suggest, as an alternative, why don't you say create an OEBB or give school employees access to PEBB, and then let OSBA and PEBB or OEBB compete on their own merits, and we'll see which one delivers the best product for school districts. Thank you very much.
Dr. Charbonnet, sorry to cut you short, but I want to thank you very much for being here today. I'm going to ask the committee members as much as we can, unless you absolutely have a question you have to ask, we're going to, just so we can get people the maximum opportunity to speak. So thank you very much.
Sure.
And also, Ms. McGorry, before you come up, I just recognize that, I recognize that one of our colleagues is here, and I know she's got a busy schedule, and also Jean Thorne is someone else that we wanted to have come testify. So first I'm going to call up Representative Sarah Gelser, or are you not going to be?
If it pleases the chair, I'd just like to listen and testify later.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Thanks. That's great, listening. Okay, so Jean Thorne. Was kind enough to come and talk a little bit about sort of implementation questions or issues that we might have. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jean Thorne. I'm the administrator of the Public Employees Benefit Board. Listening in over the days of the various hearings, part of it seems to be on PIP, but I'm actually here to talk briefly about some of the implementation challenges. Was asked to discuss that. So when you do look at the fiscal, the statutes for the Oregon Education Benefits Board have been modeled after PIB, after the statutes for PIB, so hopefully I can provide some insights into that. It establishes OEB in the Department of Administrative Services, and that's similar to the PIB language, with the board given authority to appoint the staff, hire consultants, etc. So the bill itself does not call for PEB to oversee or the PEB staff to oversee it. It establishes it within Department of Administrative Services, but in discussions with the governor's office, they have a preferred staffing arrangement. The assumption is that the staff would report to the two separate boards, but the staff would report to the PEB administrator. So under the fiscal, we would have deputies on each side, one side that works with PEB and the PEB board to continue the work, quite a bit of work. In fact, our board's meeting across the street. I had to leave the board meeting. And the other deputy to oversee the work in working with the OEB board. The staffing model is very similar. Director of Operations, Benefit Manager, and Analyst, Fiscal Coordinator, Contracts Coordinator. The implementation date of October of 08, I would say it's extremely aggressive. Is it doable? It could be doable. I would say it does require substantial work to be done in a more compressed timeline than PEB has operated under. But if you aligned all the stars and had all the right people and the right consultants and people really wishing to make this work, it could happen. Our understanding is the intent is that the board would be looking at bringing up all benefits at the same time, medical, dental, life, disability, long-term care. Certainly that adds complications. If we are looking at an October 08 timeline, it requires decisions on all the selected plans to be made probably at the latest by next May. For an open enrollment beginning in August. Backing up from there, we would need to have all the proposals in by no later than February, which means we have to have RFPs out the door probably by this coming December. So there is a significant amount of work. I think you'll see in the fiscal analysis when you get to work session, this really does require that the board be appointed, confirmed, and begin working this biennium yet. And so there would be a number, in order to actually go out for bid, we would have to have consultants gather information on all the plans and all the plan designs, on the claims experience of what is in place now. We would need to develop eligibility criteria for members. All of these things are part of the plans being able to bid. We would need to lay out basically most of the infrastructure over the coming months of how the plans would work. So that's a brief summary. I've been asked just to talk briefly about the implementation and what it would take and the basis for the analysis that you'll be seeing later.
Are there any questions, Ms. Thorne? Representative Morgan.
Ms. Thorne, thank you for being here today. We have, I think, a lot of questions on the implementation of the bill. Is it a fair assumption for this body to make that the cost of implementing the Oregon Educators Benefit Board will be in the same ballpark as the cost to implement PEB? To administrate it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, PEB has been underway for a number of years. PEB was formed in 1998, actually taking two separate boards. So our ongoing cost, we don't have all of the startups. So there are some of the costs that would be startup costs. A lot of the data gathering at the front end would be startup costs. Probably a lot of the Attorney General costs at the front end would also be more along the lines of startup costs. The staffing that we're proposing is about the same as the staffing that PIB has right now. So there certainly are parts of what would be needed that would be more intensive or be more costly at the front end over time, probably similar to what Pat has.
May I have a follow-up? In the Senate bill, Senate Bill 426, there's provision at the start of the districts coming into the plan that they'll essentially be held harmless in their choice of coverage and the cost of the coverage. Can you talk to us about what the administrative issues are in keeping that many balls in the air?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, it will be a challenge. I don't know how many plans or how many plan designs are out there right now. During the last session, I had had some discussions with those who were more in the know. They thought probably 100 different plan designs. And I believe there probably need to be some actuarial work around are these comparable benefits and the costs involved. So it is more complex than what we are undertaking now in PEB.
May I have a follow-up? So it is safe to assume, though, that in the short term there are going to be significant administrative costs here as you figure out how to make the eventual OEB happen and as you deal with the transition of the districts into the entity.
Mr. Chair, members of Morgan, yes, it would be.
We also have gotten a fiscal report from the Legislative Fiscal Office on what they think the cost of implementing is. And then there also is a piece in the work that Representative Jensen is doing in his committee that has to do with, in the governor's recommended budget, the piece that was available for the implementation of OEB. And I don't know how familiar that you are with the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis, but it appears to me to be the cost is it's significantly greater than the cost in the piece that was presented in the governor's budget. And I'm wondering if you have the ability to talk to us about what differences are reflected there.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, I haven't actually seen that piece of paper, but I think it probably is all information we gave to LFO last week. I will tell you that what was put into the governor's budget, it was done very quickly. It was basically the fiscal impact statement from the 2005 bill and was put in without PEB wasn't given an ability to kind of step back and say, are these assumptions all still valid? And so having had two more years worth of experience and having undertaken some major requests for proposals and new contracts and Attorney General work around that, my concern in talking within the executive branch was that there was not sufficient funding in there. So we did have discussions last week with the leadership of the Department of Administrative Services and with the governor's office about what the more realistic costs might be. I would say there the bottom line general fund cost is not significantly different from the general fund cost that was included in the governor's recommended budget. Last session, we were never able to get a handle on how many plans might be coming in or how many school districts might be coming in when. And whereas once the districts come in and they are purchasing their plans, their health or dental insurance plans, a portion of the premium would go to pay the administrative costs. So once it's up, other funds will be coming in. Last time, we had never put any other funds revenue in there. We were able to get a very rough estimate of how many how many enrollees might come in October of 2008 under this. And so we are estimating about 1.5 million of other funds revenue that would come in the last part of this biennium. So when you add that together with the general fund, yes, it is in terms of total funds more expensive than what had been included in the governor's recommended budget. General fund is very similar, I think probably within $100,000 or so of what was in the governor's recommended budget. But basically the difference from last time is we have more experience now in having gone through major RFPs with new contracts and also having a mandatory open enrollment, which we had not had before.
Darren wants to make a point of clarification on the point, and then we'll do one more question, and then I really want to make sure that folks who are driven have an opportunity.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to point out here that in my fiscal, it appears to that there's almost or more than double the amount, and I think it's a difference in the way this is going to be implemented. Mm-hmm. In the governor's budget, it was originally going to be in the Department of Administrative Services. The dollars now are supposed to go to the Department of Education, which then will be transferred to the Department of Administrative Services. So just as a point of clarification, the true costs are basically the bottom line number. The top number is the dollars that go into the Department of Education. They are then counted as other funds in the Department of Administrative Services on the bottom line.
Thank you. The only other thing that I don't understand here is that it says that it's estimated that the administrative assessment will generate $1.5 million, which is the number that you put out. Is this the administrative fee that is talked about in the bill that is allowed to be 2%? And what percentage of an assessment does this $1.5 million represent?
Mr. Chair and Representative Morgan, yes, that does refer to the same thing, and that's similar to PIB language, which allows up to 2%. I took a very, again, taking the rough estimate of the number of enrollees who are assumed to have their contracts expiring after the certain date. I took what I think is probably a conservative number in terms of what the premiums might be per month, assumed a 0.8 administrative fee, which is what is the OSBA endorsement fee now. PEB's administrative fee is 0.6, but I assumed a 0.8 and came up with $1.5 million. Again, that's a rough estimate. It could be more than that. If I'm trying to take a low number of how many we think would be coming in October of 08. But it would be up to the board to actually, as our board does, each year set the administrative rate, looking to see what they're projecting as expenditures and what the premiums might be.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thorne. Really appreciate you coming in and answering those questions. Thank you very much. All right, Ms. Sue McGorry. And then is John Whitty here? Mr. Whitty, just saw that you came from over 100 miles, so we'd like to call on you. You'll be on deck. And
I brought a friend with me.
All right. Well, thank you. Please. State your name for the record. Yes, very, very festive. I'm feeling Mardi Gras-like right now.
Chair Galizio and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sue McGorry. I teach 8th grade language arts and social studies in Spanish at Calipuya Middle School in Albany. And I see my senator sitting right there. I'm testifying as a member of the Oregon Education Association, where I am the chair of the Legislative Advisory Council. I'm also coming to you as a native Oregonian who knows her state can do better for its citizens. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 426. First, I'd like to share examples of the impact of our current insurance crisis with you. Last year, Sherry, an aide at Calipuya Middle School, was able to purchase a 90-day supply of a prescription for $75. With a change in insurance carrier, she now will have to pay $65 for a 30-day supply of the same medication, and 30 days only. That's over a 200% increase in cost on an aide's salary of $9 per hour. Another classified employee needs 2 tablets of potassium daily. She has blood pressure and heart problems. However, the OSBA insurance carrier has told her that only 34 tablets is the maximum that can be filled in any given month. That's barely half of the prescription her doctor ordered to meet her needs. That's a way to efficiently cut costs. Then there's me. I suffer from an embarrassment of insurance riches. I am covered by 3 different insurance carriers, 2 Blue Cross and 1 TRICARE, the military insurance carrier. That's now. But in the past, I've had poor or no coverage. As a registered nurse for well over 10 years, I had some of the poorest coverage and the highest deductibles anywhere. And now I'm looking at what insurance costs are doing to those who don't have the benefits or the salary that I have. Insurance rates are not reasonable for districts, ESDs, or community colleges. Some very large districts like Portland are self-insured, and yes, they have more flexibility and more money. However, look at Central Lynn in Brownsville. 35 employees are on a tiered rate plan, which pays the least toward members with families. For the 04-05 school year, Central Lynn District paid $435 per month for single employees, with a high of $568 per family, plus an employee out-of-pocket of $356 for family insurance. For the 05-06 school year, Central Lynn District paid $475 per month for single employees, with a high of $692 for family, plus an employee out-of-pocket of $314 for family insurance. Some people say they don't know what a statewide insurance pool would look like or how it might be constructed. We already have a model, the Public Employees Benefit Board. I speak from experience when I say that this pool works. You've been told repeatedly that Oregon's statewide insurance pool for state employees, PEB, has costs that are higher than the current statewide insurance pool run by OSBA. Well, that's true because they cover more treatments and have a larger formulary for prescription medications through their region's Blue Cross plan, which my husband has through the Department of Human Services. Yes, school employees currently share the cost of health insurance, but we really do not have much say in cost control. Insurance companies regularly, annually increase costs. In PEB's model, employees do participate in cost sharing, and there is the place to look at actuarial analysis as well as those efficiencies, those cost-cutting measures and limitations that the OSBA cites so often. We have examined reasonable options and efficiencies. We have changed carriers. We have increased our out-of-pocket expenses and decreased our benefits, and prices keep going up. Our people are suffering. Senate Bill 426 has the potential to provide health insurance with the most efficient use of limited funds. Our governor firmly supports it, as do most legislators. The Oregon School Board Association says that the endorsement fee received from its insurance carrier, Regions Blue Cross, is less than 1%. It's clear why the OSBA is opposing Senate Bill 426. This year, that 1% will be about $2.5 million from school district and employee insurance contributions to fund OSBA's budget. Please don't let the OSBA scare tactics lead you to second-guess this much-needed pool. Please question their reasons for not wanting this plan. I urge you to support Senate Bill 426. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. McGlory. And before I, Mr. Wolf, just if you have written testimony, I think it would be most effective and most helpful for us, and again, with the time constraints, we were reading your written testimony. Just talk to us and tell us your main points and just communicate with us. We'll read it. And so with that, Mr. Wolf.
Chair Galizio and members of the committee, my name is Larry Wolf. I'm president of the Oregon Education Association, which represents 46,000 members all over the state, and I'm here to ask you to support Senate Bill 426. In keeping with the chairs, I'll be happy to talk about it. One of the things that we've been looking at for years is how can we save our members money? And from the standpoint of rising health care costs, we see caps in school districts that are costing our members more and more out of pocket every day and every year. And we've been actively working with Senator Deckert and the governor for about three sessions now to try to get some kind of a bill passed that would help not only our employees but also the school districts and also the children of the state, because one of the things we can do, if we save money around health insurance costs, then that means we can put some of the vital services back into those schools that we need. And one thing, too, is that Senate Bill 426, it does take away money from special interest groups, and it puts it into the classroom. It's also accountable to the taxpayer. And I think that's extremely important because we're always talking about accountability. And this thing is very accountable. The programs are there. And the efficiencies and the savings, as far as I'm concerned, they're very straightforward. And some of the savings that we've seen, of course, projected savings of 6.7%. If the statewide pool, as much as 9% savings can be realized if standard menu plans were adopted. It shows almost $270 million that could be saved. And that's a lot of money. And that's money to go back in our classrooms. And so we strongly urge you to support 426.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wolf and Ms. McGlory. Really appreciate it. And thank you again. Now I'm going to call Mr. John Witte, over 100 miles from the High Desert Education Service District. Thank you for taking the time to come all the way this way to testify.
Chair Delisio and members, as indicated, my name is John Witte, and I'm an attorney. I work for the High Desert Education Service District. I'm an in-house attorney. I'm in-house counsel for the ESD as well as the component districts in Central Oregon. There's about six districts there, and then about the same number of districts in Eastern Oregon. And as part of my job, I bargain a lot of labor contracts, and of course, as a result of that, I deal with this question of insurance and insurance caps extensively. I wanted to very quickly try to tell you a little bit about the way it works in the districts that I deal with. In general, we bargain a cap, which is less than the premium amount, generally in the vicinity of, we're trying to get in the vicinity of 80 to 90% of the cap. We then usually generally have a committee of folks from representing the union, representing each employee group, in the group that's going to be covered by the insurance. And basically every year they get together and they find out what providers are available in the area. And they ask those providers to come to the table and bring to them proposals regarding the potential for buying insurance for them. In that situation and in that model, we have had good success. The employees are motivated to become somewhat expert in health insurance because, in essence, they are often talking about spending their money. In other words, if the premium's roughly $1,000 and the cap is roughly $800, if you go for an $1,100 cap, if a premium, because you buy better insurance, you're essentially spending your money as an employee out of pocket for that, for those benefits, for those increased benefits. The model works well because we generally get a number of insurance carriers to come to the table and offer their products to the school districts, and a recommendation is then made by the committee, and in general, we have not had difficulty. In general, that recommendation is followed by the board and by the association or the associations. Now, sometimes we have some trouble with that, but generally speaking, the committee makes a recommendation, and that works. The strength of that model is that it utilizes the competitiveness in the marketplace to try to get competitive, more competitive rates. And the employees make significant choices about what they believe is worthwhile and what they don't believe is worthwhile, what they don't want to pay for. And the model works well. Senate Bill 426 appears to me to go in the opposite direction. And I guess I'm certainly unconvinced that the potential is there for us to end up better off under 426 than we are right now. In general, we view, although insurance is very expensive and the cost for districts has gone up, but we view it as part of the compensation package. In other words, you take it together with salary, and it is one of the things that quite often can recruit us very desirable employees, especially in the classified ranks, where you're competing in a local labor market. Many times the private sector local labor market doesn't provide that kind of insurance, and we can in fact hire quality people based on those benefits and the fact that we pay, as I say, somewhere in the vicinity of 80% of the premium. But again, as from my perspective, the strength of our model and the reason that it works as well as it does is that we get the competitiveness in the marketplace to come to employees. We end up with some buy-in from our employees regarding what they buy, what's cost-effective, what benefits do they really need, and where can they cut here and there. We get that kind of buy-in, and really the system has worked well. And based on that, my impression of 426 is that we'll be going in the wrong direction if you pass that bill. And I really could do this in 4 minutes, right?
That was fantastic. Thank you very much, Mr. Witte. Again, thank you for taking so much time out of your day and coming here. And Senator Morse has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's something that's unclear to me, and it has to do with the caps that the districts put on the providing health care and what the employees pay. And if, in fact, the cost of the health care and the program came down, where would those cost savings go?
Well, in general, the employer agrees to pay up to, let's say, $800 per employee per month. If the premium is $1,000, the employee pays $200 out of pocket every month. The employer pays $800. The question of if the premium were $750 and the cap were $800, the question of who gets the $50 is a bargainable item. I notice in 426 it essentially says that the board will be able to, as I interpret it, be able to pay that to the employees as cash, which of course we are opposed to because there are times when people opt out of insurance and we don't have to pay a cap. It sounds to me like in 426 we will pay it anyway and it will be they can reimburse it to the employees in cash. And in those situations where someone's coverage, maybe there's three options for coverage, one of them is below the cap. If there's money that's essentially saved by the district, it sounds like it won't be under 426. Does that answer your question as to how the cap works?
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up, if, in fact, the gross savings of this statewide are $60 to $70 million as projected in the Watson-Wyatt study, where do those savings go? Do they go to the benefit of the employee because they don't buy down so much in terms of the copay, or do they actually go to the classroom? That's a major issue that's unclear to me as to just where these savings.
Using my example of a $1,000 premium and an $800 cap, if the premium was lowered to $900, the money is less money that the employee pays out of pocket every month. There's no savings to the district in that situation. The only way there's going to be savings to the district is if the premium costs come down, and then as a result of collective bargaining, the caps, that is the portion the employer pays, don't have to rise as much as they otherwise would.
Mm-hmm.
So if the cap's $800, and the next time we bargain, the union wants $900 and we settle at $875. If we can settle at $850 because the premium hasn't gone up as much, the district would save that increment that the cap didn't rise. And that money would be available to hire more teachers, for example, and lower class size. On the other hand, if the caps being equal, so it's a collective bargaining question. It really depends on what the parties bargain. But if the premiums come down and the cap continues to accelerate just like it would have, the savings is in the out of pocket to the employee.
Mm.
Does that make any sense?
Well, I'm afraid it does.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I'm gonna keep thanking you, but we're gonna have one more question.
One more
question. Sorry.
Okay.
They like the fact that you came so far. So.
Okay. Good.
This is the last question for this gentleman.
I want to keep balance between healthy skepticism and we love the high desert and Ben, so it's just nice to speak with someone from that area. One of the most compelling slides, and perhaps this is your first hearing on this, I'm sure you follow this issue being on the front lines as you are, one of the most compelling slides that we are presented at the first hearing that we had on this in this committee and other committees is the cost of health care for school districts across the state and what they're projected to be if we do nothing. And I think it's one of the most compelling slides because it just tells us very, very vividly and clearly no action means basically you're eroding all, unless you're going to have a huge tax increase to keep the money going into the classroom, you're eroding your ability to fund basic classroom instruction because of the rise in healthcare. So one of the things that I think we've struggled with is this proposal has been on the table for 4 or 5 years. We think it's compelling at the state level, or some of us do, that at least you have that OEBB board there accountable to the folks that are making the fiscal decisions, paying the bills, the state. But I'd be interested to hear what ideas you might have. You're much closer to the action, much more on the front lines of how do we start to get some sort of reversal of what I think is the most compelling graph that I've been shown this session, and that is where healthcare costs are going to go absent legislative action.
Well, of course, the whole question of when health care costs, premium costs rise, who's going to pay, is a subject that we bargain every time we bargain a labor contract. In other words, that's the question of how much should the cap, the amount the employer pays, go up. So if health care costs rise and premiums rise very quickly, and the district and the school districts in bargaining do not raise the cap proportionally, then more money will come out of pocket from the employees. As far as I am concerned, you know, that's a primary way for us for the districts to control costs. We bargain the cap. We can hold the cap at a particular level, and when costs go up, employees are going to have to come more out of pocket for coverage. Again, I consider the amount of cap to be part of the total compensation that we bargain for employees, and in that context, you have to balance it with the rest of the compensation. But from my perspective, if the healthcare costs rise very quickly, it's not necessarily the case that the district needs to pick up all of those costs. In fact, they shouldn't. The employees are the primary beneficiaries of the coverage, and there is no reason why the caps can't be held at a reasonable level and have a significant portion of those costs picked up by employees.
So, Mr. Chair, just one quick, and it's more of a query and a comment, but I think it's also a question. So your districts, and I think you mentioned that you bargained for 405, were responsible for, I think it's now 198. It's no longer 197, but 198. So we have yours, and you're putting stringent caps in place, perhaps, or perhaps that would be the route to control. So for your 405, you put stringent caps in place. What are we to do with the other, and what is a rational system for dealing with the other 190 districts and the decisions that they come to, where one, no cap, two, second one might have a flexible cap, third might be like yours, where you've placed very stringent caps and transferred the costs onto the employee, and we sit in this committee and figure out, how do we deal with 198 different decisions that were made out there? And if you have a better, I think we would certainly welcome some sort of better plan. This one's been out there for 4 or 5 years, and but I'm certainly eager to hear better ideas to get some sort of rational model for dealing with those costs.
First of all, I wouldn't characterize the caps that we bargain as particularly stringent. Again, we're in the 80 to 90% range in terms of what the districts pay of the total premium. Again, we have dealt with it as if it's part of total compensation, and that's how you have to look at it. Obviously, if the premium rates go up very quickly, it puts a strain on the system. I would have to say that I'm not convinced that the EOEBB, the new board you're talking about, is going to be any better capable of dealing with those kinds of rising health care costs than we can when we go out and sample the market and get 5 or 6 providers to come to the table and take their best shot at getting our business. It seems like we have been as successful as anybody else has in dealing with these costs. I think as successful as the PEBB has been in dealing with those costs, and it seems like going to a system where we don't have those options, where we can't get the kind of buy-in that we do get from our employees because they participate in this election process and understand that to the extent that they can hold down health care costs, the premiums won't go up as fast. Those are all positive things, and I think we'll lose that if it's done statewide.
Thank you very much, Senator Becker and Mr. Witte.
Appreciate it.
Okay, now I'm going to call up 3 people at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know one another. These are 3 people in opposition. Brett Yancey, Randy Schild, and Kathy, it looks like, is it Rodman? Rodman?
Rodman?
Come on up. On deck we have Annette Mattson and Angie Peterman.
Sure. Chair Galizio, members of the committee, first of all, thank you for allowing us to testify today. My name is Brett Yancey. I'm the Director of Finance for the Springfield School District down the road. I am here representing Springfield, and we are not currently involved in a trust. We are currently participating in joint insurance programs with all employees at the table. We are somewhat unique in that we have brought together certified, classified, and administrative positions and created one employee insurance committee. We have one employee insurance plan with two different options. We have one common cap and one out-of-pocket from the superintendent to the food service employee. And what I'm here to talk about is our experience in negotiating directly with our insurance provider. We have a buying power of 1,500 employees, and we have developed an insurance plan based on our priorities and our needs in our district. We have specifically negotiated the terms of coverage with our provider to meet our identified needs. We've managed our own experience over the last number of years, and have kept costs down through providing local incentives to save resources. Over the last 2 years, our costs have only increased approximately 6% in premium per year, annually, significantly less than insurance rates across the state. Any increased insurance spending would take much-needed resources away from the classroom. We are currently, and I was up yesterday, talking to two of our local legislators about the possibility of increased revenue, and we're working with our school district to identify resources on how we want to place those revenues in the classroom. This could have significant impact on our ability to do that. We attribute this local cooperation with a focus on employee education and employee ownership and incentive-based programs. And we are currently paying it for medical and vision, $687 per employee per month. We are concerned that a forced joining into a state-run system could take away resources, again, that are needed for our educational programs. We're looking for an inclusion of an opt-out clause in Senate Bill 426. We feel that if we are forced into a state-run insurance program, that this, would have significant impact. Although we respect the effort to reduce costs by insurance pooling, we've been doing that for a number of years, and we strongly urge you to include an opt-out clause for districts such as ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson.
Okay. Representative Felicio and members, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Kathy Rodman. I'm the business manager for the Corvallis School District. I'm here on behalf of the Corvallis School Board, who adopted a resolution in opposition to Senate Bill 426. They did so after meeting with Senator Morse, representing...
Pardon me, Ms. Rodman. Can you move the mic a little closer?
Okay.
We're getting old.
Well, I'm kind of soft speaking, too. Our board adopted the resolution opposing the Senate bill after a meeting with Senator Morse, Representative Gelser, and Representative Olson, along with the Albany School Board and the Buenos School Board in the meeting. I am here today to talk specifically about concerns with the proposed bill. In the bill, it calls for the Oregon Education Benefits Board to define eligibility, and it gives them the flexibility to do that in a much broader way than we currently have now. So if you define eligibility to include employees that work less than half time, for instance, it means that we're covering more employees. The cost to the employer will increase, even with a cap. The Oregon Education Board is composed of 6 out of 10 members who would benefit from this kind of plan. I'm very concerned about self-interest being represented on that board, and I worry about benefit creep that might be associated with that. Where bigger benefits are provided puts more pressure on a district to raise that cap in order that employees don't have to pay so much out of pocket. One of the goals of the Oregon Education Benefit Board is to provide high-quality benefits at a cost that's affordable to districts. But who's to define affordable? Right now, each district gets to define it. And each district gets to do that in a responsive and responsible way that meets their local concerns, their local employees' needs. Nothing that I've seen in this bill limits the benefits that would be provided. And I'm just concerned again about that benefit creep. Also about unintended consequences. Many school boards have an agreement with retirees that provides insurance after retirement under a district-paid plan. Those kind of agreements call for the benefits, in many cases, to be defined, and they have to be provided in a substantially similar manner for the life of that retiree's retirement. If the OEBB does not come up with a plan that's substantially similar, then the district would have to pay that difference out of pocket, and it appears that there's no provision for that under this kind of bill. I think that could be very expensive. Section 8 of the bill provides that any part of the district contribution could be paid in cash to the employee. Right now what happens is that many of our members who are part-time, and school districts have a number of part-time staff, many of our part-time staff choose not to participate. Over the years, we've turned that into more programs, smaller class size, and direct benefit to students. Under your proposed bill, this would go to cash in the employee's pocket, and I'm concerned about that. I think it would also affect adverse selection, that employees would opt in when they need coverage, they'd opt out when they don't and take the cash. In Section 14, it exempts self-insured health plans, but it does not speak to self-insured dental or vision plans. Corvallis School District has been operating under a self-insured dental and vision plan for the last several years. We've saved substantial money doing that. This would take away our ability to continue. The task force language at the end of this bill is toothless. I think it's feel-good kind of language, and I'm disappointed that it's there. Because what happens if it's determined that there's no cost savings, there's no consequence, and there's no ability to opt out of a program once this starts? I'm concerned that this ignores the competitive market, the flexibility that employers need, and local needs. What I expect of my legislators is that you'll base your decision on sound advice and independent studies. I'm concerned that the Watson-Wyatt study is vague and can't be verified very easily, that the Minnesota and Michigan studies don't take into account the market in Oregon and the conditions that we have here. I ask that you demand independent, objective study first before making such a monumental decision and before mandating that every school district in Oregon participate in it, like it or not. I'm concerned that this is being rushed through. We've heard concerns about the implementation. We know what happens when mandates come through and changes are made without providing adequate time to implement them. And I'm asking you to think about what you're doing critically. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Redman. Mr. Shield, I apologize.
Thank you, Chair Gleason and members of the committee. I'm Randy Shield, Superintendent of Potomac School District. And I'm here today, again, to also speak in opposition to Senate Bill 426 and the concerns that we have financially. It's tough for you because you have a group of people who come up and they say, oh, look how much more money this is going to cost us. And then you have others who come up and say, look at all the money this is going to save us. And I guess that's the bottom line of our concern. I sat with 20 superintendents at the Northwest Regional ESD just last Friday. We talked about this issue and what to do with it. And the bottom line was, 20 people across the board said, wait a minute, this is scary to jump into something like this before we've looked at it close enough. We're relying on studies that weren't Oregon, weren't the clientele, weren't working with us specifically. And that's scary. If we make a mistake here, it's really scary. I can give you the OSBA numbers and what that's going to look like for Tillamook, and it's going to cost us $500,000, $750,000 more, somewhere in that range next year. And that would be devastating to us. But we're right now looking at if we can get from you the $6.3 billion level funding of education, adding back music and PE, first time in 4 years. But the reality is that we're talking the same numbers there. 6.0 to 6.3 is about $500,000 to Tillamook every year. The numbers from OSBA are, again, 500 to 750, depending on what you add in there. And so, really, our concern is, boy, we got to look at this carefully and know what to expect, because there's nothing worse for us or for you to jump into this situation and say, oops, this is more expensive than what districts had before. You've done a great job fighting for the value of education and putting money there, and it'd be really sad to lose it on a decision that wasn't well discovered all the way through. And so our urge is that you will look carefully and study this longer than what I believe we've done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shields, Ms. Rodman, Mr. Nancy.
Thank you
very much. Okay, now Annette Mattson and Angie Peterman. And then following in the final testimony, Michael Dembro, David Reeves, Frank Goulart, and Michael Cannarello.
good afternoon. Thanks so much for the opportunity to testify today. A little background in my paid life. I'm work for Portland General Electric.
Will you state your name for the
record? Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Matt Mattson. I'm sorry. I thought you were doing this. I'm very nervous.
You should see how we feel.
I'm good. Anyway, I'm Annette Mattson, and in my paid life, I work for Portland General Electric, currently on assignment as a project manager in economic development. That work includes serving as the chair of the North Clackamas County Chamber of Commerce and the vice chair of the Clackamas County Economic Development Commission. In my unpaid professional life, my past includes service on the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, the Paul Valley Road Water District Budget Committee, the Multnomah County Charter Review Committee, service as a precinct committee person, and my role today, which is as vice chair of the David Douglas School Board, where I have served for the last 12 years. I speak today representing the position of all seven of our elected board members, our superintendent, Barbara Rommel, and I received an email before I left my job to come here today, receiving permission from David Douglas Education Association president and high school French teacher, Bob Gray, to also say that I'm representing his position. Our board of directors at David Douglas unanimously opposes a mandatory insurance pool. We take this position because every year we sit down with our local union leadership, our two union presidents, discuss what kind of coverage our 900-plus employees are looking for, compare competitive bids from various providers, and then together choose the two most cost-effective competitive bids from the various providers. This provides the best coverage our staff desires at a cost rate that is fiscally palatable to our taxpayers. By doing so, we keep costs down, preserve community choice, take advantage of market competition, and keep grassroots, on-the-ground democracy alive. When we get a better deal, we change carriers. Before taking a position on Senate Bill 426, our business office at David Douglas compared our current costs plan by plan to those offered by PEB, since that's really what this plan looks like when you look at the structure of it. What we concluded that shifting to this type of plan would add at least another $2.4 million per year to our health insurance costs. And that's conservative. The numbers I received Friday when we looked at our number of single coverage employees in Blue Cross and their rates compared to what the Blue Cross rates are in PEB and our two coverage, we're looking at $5.4 million additional health insurance costs. Now what that means for us is 25 teachers with master's degrees. Now, I'm aware the proponents of Senate Bill 426 are saying that PEB is not the model for this new OEBB. In fact, they testified no school district will be forced to provide lesser benefits than the new model. But we know that when you offer too many plans, you actually drive costs up. As you deliberate this issue, please keep in mind health insurance caps exist in 92% of the local district, and any new plans have to have significantly less costs, and again, those costs go to employees. This creates a reduction in overall compensation, and that's not what we want. We ask that you have an unbiased third-party study of Oregon data. I know some people have said this is expensive, but it is really just a tiny fraction of the total money on the line in the state on this issue. That will provide us all with the assurance of the direction that we have to take to contain health care costs. To be valuable, the study has to be detailed, including plan descriptions, medical and pharmacy claims, vendor information, administrative costs, employer and employee contributions. Leaving out that any of those elements really puts us in the wrong direction. And I just really ask that you slow this process down and hire an unbiased actuarial with expertise to complete a full study of Oregon data. It's a sound business practice, and it shouldn't be ignored to do less. We need to be accountable to our taxpayers. All of us do. We take that very seriously in David Douglas. And just please don't remove those 25 teachers from our classrooms. The 6.3 budget already puts us into deficit spending. This increases our deficit in David Douglas even more. And I'm really sorry that Senator Deckert has left, because he made a comment about the costs of increased health care. And absolutely, they are increasing dramatically. This bill does absolutely nothing to address the root causes of ever-increasing health care coverage. And I suggest that to change the benefits of school district employees, instead of simply working to change the root causes of increased health care, it's sort of like painting over your ceiling to cover the stains instead of fixing the roof. So please, the actuarial study.
Thank you, Ms. Matson. Ms. Peterman?
Thank you, Chair Galicio and members of the committee. I'm Angie Peterman. I'm here today representing the Oregon Association of School Business Officials as their executive director, also known as OASBO. The OASBO Board of Directors voted this past week to oppose Senate Bill 426. In the absence of a credible third-party evaluation of the actual potential savings from a mandatory statewide pool, the board did not feel they could support 426. You've heard much testimony today about the number of districts that provide insurance caps, what those caps mean. There are currently, on average, 88% of school district health insurance premiums being paid by districts, the other 12% on average by employees. That being the case, any initial savings, it seems, would go first to the employees, lastly into the classroom, which I believe is where the desired impact of these dollars is. OASBO feels very strongly it's absolutely critical that an independent actuarial evaluation be done of this potential plan program prior to its implementation. It's absolutely critical that we objectively take a look at the plan design, what we currently offer in the state, if we're going to guarantee that no district will see a loss of comparable coverage or an increase in cost. How are we going to accomplish that? Ms. Thorne mentioned earlier today that we don't even currently have a complete list of what those plans are and what the plan designs are. How could we possibly look at plan studies that have been done in other states and determine that, in fact, there are savings and efficiencies in Oregon from doing that. There's a copy of a letter from Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon that accompanies the testimony I've given you today. That's being provided to give you their perspective on the need to do an independent study and some of the rationale for that. Regents is one of the largest insurance providers or carriers in the state, and they believe that it's time to do an independent review and study to determine whether there are savings and to what extent those savings exist. In the absence, I think, of a thorough and complete study on this particular issue, I would urge you to reject Senate Bill 426. Thanks for the opportunity to address you today, and if you have questions, I'll sure try to answer.
Well, we want to thank you both for taking the time to come out. Really appreciate your testimony. Appreciate it. All right. Michael Dembro, David Reeves, Frank Gouard, Michael Canarella.
Okay, thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dembro. I teach English at Portland Community College, the Cascade campus, which I have done for 25 years. The first few as a part-timer and then as a full-timer. In fact, I have one of my students here I discovered from when I was a part-timer 25 years ago, and that was a shock. But she looks great, and it's great to see her. I'm also the president of Portland Community College Faculty Federation, and I'm a vice president of AFT Oregon. And I've recently had the honor of being appointed by the State Board of Education to be its first community college faculty advisor. But I'm here today to speak on behalf of the faculty, the community college faculty around the state, both those represented by AFT Oregon and those by the Oregon Education Education Association, as well as those not represented by a union, to urge you to vote for this measure, SB 426. You know, I testified on this 4 years ago, and it was a good idea then, and it's even more necessary now. It's been 4 years now, and it's time to move this this bill. I've been involved in collective bargaining for 20 years on the community college level, and bargaining health care costs has always been a challenge. I need to tell you, although you're getting a lot of testimony from people who are part of the OSBA coalition, it's a challenge bargaining under an OSBA environment. We have a lot of problems, which I could go into if we had time. But I'll just say that the assertion that we are now in a competitive environment and that OEBB will remove competition is just erroneous. Finally, I just want to say that one positive feature of SB 426 from our perspective is precisely that it provides a place for qualified part-time faculty to find coverage. Right now, it's very difficult for them to find coverage. They have to buy it on their own, and many go without coverage. This will be a place where they can find coverage, even if they have to pay at their own expense. The degree to which the college pays for the cost is, of course, a bargaining issue. And at our school, the college pays about 50% of the premium. That's a negotiated kind of issue. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleagues. I have to run back to do a night class. So I just urge you to do the right thing. That's actually what I'm teaching tonight. And support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Michael Canarella. I'm in Senator Deckard's district. I'm the labor relations specialist and hired by the two unions, AFT unions, at Portland Community College. That's the classified, which is about 700 employees, faculty about 1,200. I've been involved in negotiations now for a number of years at the community college level. I'd like to tell you a little bit about the Joint Committee on Insurance Benefits, which is a labor management committee. I can't tell you how many hours we have spent in that committee. We're still friendly with each other, but the problems that we have in trying to find coverage for people, and as Michael Dembo said, we are in an OSBA environment. It is not competitive. We get word from OSBA what is being offered, and that's it. We don't have any input whatsoever into that coverage. We are not allowed to get the experience that our employees, how much health care do our employees use, so that we can take it to the market. They will not give us that information. And we have a provision in the contract with OSBA that we cannot go to Blue Cross if we were to bail out. We cannot go to Regency and even get a bid from them. And so it's interesting to hear the other testimony about how the market seems to be working for some, and I don't doubt their testimony, but it's not working at Portland Community College. The other piece of this is, the time, effort, and work that both sides, labor and management, have been doing to try to find a pool for our part-timers. Let me just give you an idea. We have approximately 400 full-time faculty. We have approximately 400 part-time faculty who work more than half-time. Now, should I tell them to go work at Wendy's, which I understand gives health insurance for part-timers, or Starbucks, or should we do the right thing here and try to find and negotiate health care for part-timers? That's what we're trying to do. We're very supportive of OEBB. We would like it to move out of the committee into the floor and get passed and really roll up the sleeves and start working on this. Thank you very much.
My name is David Reeves. I also teach at Portland Community College. I teach English as a second language, particularly workplace training, and I've been teaching there for over 10 years now. I'm a part-time faculty. I do an 80% workload. and as such, being technically part-time, I'm not part of the group plans at the college. I purchased my own insurance. It's high deductible. I can afford it. The problem is, if any of you ever purchased your own private insurance plan, when you're not on a group plan, the premiums are, you know, if you're in good health, you have no prior, they're not convictions, what are they called? Any prior record or whatever, yes. If you're in good, medical conditions, that's it. If you're in good health, the prices nonetheless are priced towards 5-year bracket. So, you know, I'm not that old now, but 50 to 55 bracket, 56 to 60 bracket, 61 to 65 bracket, those get really, really expensive. And I see, you know, I don't mind paying my own insurance. I think this would be great if I had access to a pool where the costs are, there's one policy, no matter what age you are, there's one cost. So those of you that are paying, you know, if your policy is about $350 or so, I think for a lot of people, it's what a premium costs without dental or vision, that's spread out from the people age 20 to the people age 65 in your plan. And that's what I see would be a great benefit of this. You know, I can keep paying out of my own pocket, but it would be great if I just had access to a group plan. I think that's the best way to get health insurance in this country. So I see that as a real advantage. I also see it as an advantage to my other colleagues that do have prior medical conditions for whatever reason and are absolutely denied any coverage. You know, even if it were to cost higher, they're just simply denied that. And I think that's very unfair for people who have been working there over half time for years and years. As, you know, call us part time, but we are a permanent workforce there. And I think it's totally unfair to deny us any access, even if we can pay it ourselves, simply access to a group plan. And that's a great thing when I found out about this in this bill, so I support it.
Thank you very much. Chair Galizio, members of the committee. My name is Frank Goulard. I'm the faculty department chair for mathematics at Portland Community College. And actually, I'm in Senator Devlin's district, and I have lived there about 13 years, back when he was Representative Devlin, and has evolved nicely to Senator, and I congratulate you for that, Senator Devlin. I am speaking, as my esteemed colleagues have spoken, about the access issue. As faculty department chair, there are 35 part-time faculty members that I supervise in my department, mathematics department. We serve about 11,000 students just coming through our math classes alone. Those part-time faculty members tell me, one by one, what a strain it is for some of them to get by with no health insurance for some of them, or purchasing their own, as David has suggested that he does. And it's just, to me, in our country and in our grand state of Oregon, it just is something that we need as a group, as a body, as a state, to get rid of the divergence, get rid of the dichotomy of the haves and the have-nots. Let's bend down and help our fellow men and women on this issue. The other thing there is that when people come up to me and say, with part-time faculty members that come up and confide in me and say, I can't afford to go to the doctor, or I can't afford that ambulance ride after I've had an epileptic seizure, I mean, we're just undermining their health. And it gets back to the access issue. If there's a cost sharing of the health insurance premium, then that's just fine, as David, again, has pointed out. Senator Chair Galizio, Senator Morris, raised a question about caps earlier. At our college, for a single-only coverage, the cost of that is $400 per month. But our cap that the college contributes is $480 per month. That $80 reverts back to the college. I, as the employee, don't get the extra $80. And I think you had asked that earlier of another gentleman. So in our situation, that's what happens to the excess over the premium, between the amount of the premium and the higher cap in this particular situation. So I thank you, and I urge you to support this bill and move it along, please. We've worked on this long time, 6 years, over many sessions and many studies. I urge this body to please move this bill along, and thank you for your support.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much. Appreciate it. Okay, now, Representative Gelser is going to be really extraordinarily brief. In fact, it's going to be a limerick, maybe? No, you don't have to rhyme or anything like that, but...
I've lost my voice.
Oh!
Kind of
we'll listen carefully, and this will be it. Okay.
Great. Thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to come and testify today. For the record, my name is Representative Sarah Gelser, and I represent House District 16, which includes the part of Benton County that has Corvallis and Philomath. You have already heard a lot of what I've heard from people in my local districts, from Kathy Rodman, who is the business manager of the Corvallis School District, which is the largest district that is there. And I think as I've talked to people, I can understand where the concerns come from, and I think that we all share them. We have a desire for low cost and health insurance, and I think we can all agree that we don't want more teacher layoffs, we don't want more classified layoffs, and we don't want to have to close more schools. And that is why I've come today to testify and offer my support of an amendment that I believe that Representative David Edwards is going to be offering. I think that it offers a happy medium that will provide some reassurance to our partners in local school districts. It's my understanding that Representative Edwards' amendment would allow us to adopt Senate Bill 426 and move forward as though we were going to implement it, but at the same time have the Legislative Fiscal Office commission a study that would be based on Oregon data now. I think that the benefit of this is that it puts a date certain on the end of the study. It allows us to move forward and helps those of you that have been in the building much longer than I avoid the Groundhog Day scenario where it's the same issue each session. I think that some might say that it would be an expense to do a study only to go forward and implement it, or an expense to do a study and then lose those administrative costs of doing that study. But I think it's a little bit like buying trip insurance before you go on an expensive vacation. You're probably definitely going to take the trip, but in case something goes wrong, you have that backup. I think the investment would be worth providing that peace of mind to our local districts that in the long run, this is a plan that will save them money. And I think it's a reasonable request from our partners in the local school districts to want to have that reassurance that this plan will save them money. So thank you for the opportunity to testify and to listen today.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Gelser, and I hope your voice strengthens. We need your voice here in this building. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Well, you're going to close the
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Okay, I'm going to close the public testimony on House Bill, Senate Bill 426A. And we have several. Yeah. I was going to give up. Come on, man. So, just kind of one big picture thing, I would just note that we had testimony last week, and we had quite a few people testify, and this has been in a lengthy conversation, so I just want to make sure that people are aware that in addition to today's testimony, we had probably almost 2 hours of testimony from a variety of people last week. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 426A. And first, I'm going to turn it over to the esteemed Darren Hill from Legislative Fiscal, who is going to talk about the LFO fiscal, the appropriations element, and I believe it's amendments 7 and 8.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You should all have a copy of my analysis. I will try to be as brief as possible, Mr. Chair. What this really does is go through and listing specifically what the expenses would be for the 07-09 biennium. As Ms. Thorne mentioned, it also we also make a recommendation to give out dollars during the current biennium to further the implementation of the bill. So one thing I'd like to point out to you is, as I had mentioned earlier, as you look at the dollars here, the other funds dollars actually include also the general fund dollars. The general fund dollars will be passed through from Department of Education to the Department of Administrative Services. So instead of looking like it's really a $12 million bill, the $6.996 amount is the actual expenditures that will be expended in the 07-09 biennium. As was also mentioned, there is the administrative assessment will generate $1.5 million, or is estimated to do that. Our recommendation at this time is to not give any limitation for that revenue. I think, as Ms. Thorne mentioned, we won't know where we really stand on that till late in 2009. So what we would suggest is that the Department of Administrative Services may come to an emergency board or to the 2009 Joint Committee on Ways and Means and request necessary limitation. The one piece I did want to point out is if there's any dollars less than that, then there would probably need to be, or there would need to be, a general fund appropriation. With that, I guess if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Any questions on the LFO analysis?
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question on the process that we're going to undertake here?
Sure.
So is it your intention that, I know that we have a pile of proposed amendments here. One of them is Representative Edwards' proposal for the study. Another one is the proposal, the conceptual amendment that Senator Morse and I are going to bring forward for a study. So is your intention to first move the amendments with the exception of the studies into the bill, and so we would need to make a judgment on moving those amendments in without knowing what the outcome is with regard to the study amendments?
As I tried to indicate earlier, my intention is we're going to talk about 7 and 8, hopefully move those, and then I think Representative Edwards is going to come forth with his amendment, and then the conceptual amendment, and then we can talk about Amendments 6 and 5. And we're going to leave no later than 5 o'clock.
And what is Amendment 6 and Amendment 5?
They're mainly housekeeping measures that really clarify language. There were just concerns about the language not being as tight. And also one is something from our caucus that there were concerns about the task force, someone from management to the task force. So.
Okay.
All right.
Do you want me to go through 7 and 8?
Yes, please.
The Dash 7 amendments are simply the dollars that match up to my fiscal analysis, appropriating dollars to the Department of Education and setting limitation for the Department of Administrative Services, PIB. For both the current biennium and for the next biennium. The one piece I would like to point out is under sections 25 and 26, we had spoken with James Sager, the policy advisor from the governor's office, who had told us there was a expectation that these dollars would be paid back. And so we have worked with Ledge Council to add those two sections here. But other than that, all that Dash 7s do is match up to the fiscal. And then the Dash 8s, again, was another point of clarification in discussing this with the governor's office and with Ms. Thorne. There was a point of clarification, and she had mentioned it earlier, that the PEB administrator is going to oversee the implementation. And so that's what the Dash 8s do. I should also mention, I guess, that both of these amendments change the implementation date so that things can occur during the current biennium.
Thank you very much. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendments Dash 7 and Dash 8.
Thank you. Senator Devlin has moved the Dash 7 and Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 426A. Any discussion? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on both of these amendments, and I have very great trepidations about setting this bill in motion and spending the money without the information that we need to make a reasoned deliberation about whether we're going in the right direction.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Morgan. Any other discussion? Any other objections? Okay, why don't we do a roll call vote?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
We're voting on
both A7 and A8 amendments.
Okay. Senator Schrader?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Deckert?
Votes aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye, with the notation that there's no commitment on future, either in the fall or on the floor.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, the motion carries with the dash 7 and 8 amendments. They have been adopted. Okay, now, Representative Edwards.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move LC-84, amendments dated 2-19-07 to Senate Bill A-426.
Okay, Representative Edwards has moved the dash 4 amendment on Senate Bill 426A. Representative Edwards, did you wish to give a description?
Yes. In the interest of the committee's time, I'll keep my opening description brief. I've tried to apply my experience as a former policy analyst and a current business consultant to the issues around Senate Bill 426. And after reviewing the three studies or analyses prepared in 2003, especially the Aon Consulting study, which used Oregon data, however, selectively, I believe there's a high probability the risk associated with taking no action and permitting the cost of health benefits to balloon almost exponentially is greater than the risk of adopting the measure. Statewide, I believe the measure will have a net positive impact on the stability and real costs associated with health insurance for school employees. That said, out of concern for the potential local impacts of the bill, and out of respect for my colleagues, both inside and outside my caucus, who find the available data unpersuasive, I'm proposing the amendment before you, dash A4. In brief, this amendment would accomplish the following. Authorize the Legislative Fiscal Office to commission a study by an independent actuarial focused solely on the potential administrative cost savings that could accrue to the state in general and to local districts in particular if the Senate bill were adopted. Allow the proposed management board to be selected and confirmed by the Senate upon passage of the bill prior to the completion of the study, and use the study results to be delivered no later than September 15th of this year as the basis of a go-no-go decision by the emergency board. Generally speaking, this amendment would treat the results of an independent study as a reverse trigger. Any demonstrable cost savings as identified by the selected actuarial firm and confirmed by the emergency board would allow the bill to take full effect, that is, empower the proposed board to fulfill the functions and duties as spelled out in the measure. The same outcome would also occur in a case where the independent actuarial determined the data supplied by the relevant parties, including the OEA and OSBA, along with their insurance providers, was insufficient for the purposes of generating accurate results. There would be no excuse at this time regarding the completeness of the work. Now, you may wonder why the amendment allows for early stage development of the board during the study period. And quite frankly, this provision is the result of a decidedly Solomon-like political compromise. timely implementation of the bill is critical to its advocates, while verifying the premise of the bill is equally critical to its detractors. So this amendment would facilitate both goals, although admittedly not without some cost to the state. At a conceptual level, it has the reluctant, some would say grudging, acceptance of the governor's office, the OEA, and in the absence of a stronger alternative, the OSBA. So for my own part, the associated costs can be justified as a necessary investment to either save millions of dollars or alternately avoid losing millions of dollars. So given that the estimated cost of this amendment, including the board's startup expenses, is estimated to be somewhere between $480,000 and $1.5 million, I think commissioning the study constitutes a prudent, though admittedly inelegant, step toward meeting the needs of both advocates and opponents halfway.
Very articulate. Representative Morgan?
Further discussion?
Further discussion?
If I might, I want to really express my heartfelt thanks to Representative Edwards for the work that he's done on this. And we spent a long time talking about this amendment yesterday in relation to the conceptual amendment that Senator Morse and I want to offer. And having during my legislative career taken steps towards the middle in a number of situations where I ended up being shot in both sides, I very much appreciate the efforts that you've put forth in this arena. I would, however, I also want to say that I won't vote for this amendment, and I want to give the reasons why I won't vote for it. First of all, having participated in this discussion at a very detailed level during the 03 session, where this fell apart for me was in seeing an analysis district by district of the impacts, and that there were indeed savings over the breadth of the system, but when you took a look at it on a district by district basis, there were winners and losers. And it is, I think, very difficult to expect that you can equitably put this bill on the ground not knowing whether there are going to be winners and losers. And I think that it is a shortcoming of this amendment that it doesn't specify that the analysis has to be down to the district level. Another aspect to this that I'm very uneasy with is that there will be somewhere between $1.5 million spent, if I'm correct, before we get to the place where we have the report to make a judgment as to whether this is a good direction to go in. I think that it is going to be very difficult for us to go back to the taxpayers of the state of Oregon and tell them that we have wasted $1.5 million of their hard-earned dollars and have to change gears on this thing. So I think that not implementing the plan before we have some questions answered is very prudent. I also think that the time frame for the completion of the study is too short in this amendment. And I appreciate Representative Edwards' work on this, and I think that if you were in the private sector, this would probably be plenty of time. But given the environment that we work on in this process, I don't think that there's enough time to bring the information forward. I think that also there are numerous issues that have been brought forward very eloquently by the school, the financial officers and the administrators that deal with part-time staffing and the issue of the capping and where that money gets dispersed in the system. There are a number of issues that need to be looked at here, adding onto policies part-time people that are more than are prescribed in the bill that are not involved in being insured right now. There just are a number of things that need to be looked at in the bill in terms of what those mean as cost increases for the district. So with that, I again just want to express my thanks to you for doing this, but I will be voting no on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Further discussion, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'd like to also give my understanding to Representative Edwards in the process that he's went through. I've been in that situation many times before, and I think he'll look back on this day 10 years from now, and after he's been through it about 15 more times. But I did have a couple of quick questions. One, he mentioned the e-board, and I see nowhere in the bill where the e-board is mentioned. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin. It was mistakenly left out of the draft committed by LC, and it was intended to be reinserted.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I will not be supporting this amendment, but I will also be submitting a request to Legislative Council for a clarification should that amendment have been in here. One being, can the e-board, in this particular case, take what is clearly a policy decision and be the final arbiter of it? I think that has been a question before, and I think if this bill had been constructed that way, and I will ask it based on if it was constructed that way, because I think it would have crossed the line. If this bill had not had the e-board in it at all, I believe it would have crossed another line. If the decision was absolutely up to the actuary, I believe that the legislature would have been delegating its authority to another body, and that may have been, and a constitutional question may have arisen at that time also. But with that, I speak very positively about all of Representative Edwards' work, but I will be opposing the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Senator Morse.
Thank you. I would like to echo Mr. Chair and colleagues the comments of Representative Morgan. I think she stated very well some major deficiencies in this amendment. I also would extend my appreciation to Representative Edwards for going this extra step. But I do have a question with respect to page 2, line 13, where the reference is to the fact that this act becomes operative if the analysis demonstrates that the administrative costs borne by the districts providing the contracting for benefit plans through the Oregon Education Benefit Board would be lower than the administrative costs borne by the districts providing their contracting for benefit plans if this 2007 Act were not enacted. My question is, what does lower mean?
Any demonstrable savings.
Lower by $1, $1,000, $5 million?
$1 would trigger it.
Pardon?
$1 would trigger it.
$1 would trigger it.
Mm-hmm.
Colleagues, Mr. Chair, if I may follow
up. Senator Morse.
To skate out onto the thin ice that's been created with the strength of the opposition that is genuine, with the uncertainties that remain with respect to the analysis on both sides of this issue, and to now in turn actually set in motion the bill, spending what could be an appropriation of $1.5 million, with the prospect that $1 demonstrated savings would in fact overturn an existing structure that allows school districts choice and flexibility, would be a tragedy. And for that reason, the policy reason please, this is not meant to be unkindly, of somewhat of a charade of going through this study in a compressed time frame, in a very limited scope, on the basis of lower of $1 is not the policy that I believe the state of Oregon and this legislature should be doing. We're on thin ice here, and to take a more measured approach, this is a long term. This thing, if in fact there are savings that are significant, I would be the first to stand in line and say, let's go for it. We don't have that data, and this amendment does not provide us that data. And this is a huge, huge decision that we're making here. And to move it in an arbitrary time frame in a way that is not thoughtful, independent, and objective is, in fact, a mistake.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Further discussion? Go ahead.
Representative Edwards, it's your amendment we're discussing.
Representative Edwards. I would like to clarify a couple of points. Firstly, the difficulty in determining demonstrable cost savings involves identifying what you consider a significant amount of cost savings. And that is difficult to predict because it's simply one assumption piled on another in the sense of trying to identify what the threshold would be that would trigger this. So that's why I didn't include a clause which indicated the exact threshold that would trigger the switchover. Secondly, in terms of the compressed time frame that other folks have mentioned, I consulted with both LFO and LRO on the timing of this, and given their previous experience in commissioning other similar studies, they indicated that a 6-month time frame would be challenging but doable.
And the point was to ensure that the study results were received in time prior to the OEBB commissioning any issuing an RFP to receive their rate plans. Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I preferred this whole issue when I didn't know who was for it and who was against it. When we didn't, and so much has been discussed in terms of the testimony of the level of opposition and the nature of the opposition and the arguments of the opposition. And one of the fondest periods I had working on this legislation was when I had no idea who liked it and who didn't like it and why they liked it, because we were, at least at those moments, pretty focused on whether polls work. Definitely came to the position that they do. Studying it is hard because you're having to make assumptions about what this mythical board that is being created, or not so mythical actually, board that's being created, what decisions they would make, and it's just hard to model the various decisions that any board will make. You can look at the composition, and that's a very good discussion that we spent too many hours discussing, proper composition of the board. But that is the nature of any studies, that information is going to get you in. We've had a number of folks look at different studies that all determine the same thing. Polls work. The board is essential in making that poll work. And what has happened in the last 4 years in terms of an expedited process, this feels anything but expedited to me. It is something that has been on the table for Oregon public policy for 5 years. I think we know that a poll will work, and we better make sure that this board, that if this bill goes forward, does its job. And in terms of accountability to that board, I think of no greater body than the one that sits here now, maybe not every 2 years, but every year, to monitor that board. And so this can get incredibly complex, and then it can get very, very simple. And to me, it was those simple days that where it was very bipartisan, and not everyone agreed, but it was those simple days that we bought into the concept, and we just really didn't know who lined up where. And I hope those folks that have come down to the Capitol and have a great deal of interest in this know that the proponents are and were very focused on that very question, and we think this is a rational model that will work well for Oregonians, but we have good backstops, and that is this body needs to set the statutes of the state and to make decisions. And so I know that now I'm going bigger than Representative Edwards' amendment, but it's why I would oppose this amendment, because this thing has been studied, and I think it's time to put what is a very good idea into practice and to monitor its effectiveness.
Thank you, Senator Deckert. And with that, we have on the before the committee the motion to adopt the...
Oh, we don't have an motion.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, Representative Edwards has made a motion to adopt the A4 Amendment to Senate Bill 426A, and will the staff call the roll, please? Senator Schrader?
I mean, no, sir. I have no comments. I'm just...
Senator Morse?
I have to serve.
Excuse me? Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Deckard?
Votes no.
Senator Starr?
Votes yes.
Vice Chair Devlin?
No.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Edwards?
Yes.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Chair Galizio?
No.
Motion fails. Okay, the A4, the A4 amendment has failed. Representative Morgan.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to express my appreciation for you for allowing Senator Morse and I to bring forward these conceptual amendments. We got caught, I think, in the situation that a lot of people have been caught in, with the drafters being already breathing through a straw on trying to get bills out. And so after we had the conversation that we should be wearing our T-shirts with tire tracks on the back today, we decided not to be wasting time down there by having them actually draft this. But we did want to bring forward for the committee's consideration some conceptual amendments to Senate Bill 426. What we're trying to address here are a number of problems that have become very clear over the course of the two public hearings that this committee has had on the bill. There is, I think, a great deal of anxiety and trepidation over the lack of data that the business agents, the superintendents, and the school boards have to try to figure out what the impact of this bill is going to be on them. There has been a lot of data thrown out there. I don't think there's any shortage of data. We've got information that has come out from when this bill was considered in the 03 session, the Aon study. That is information now that is about 7 years old, and there have been a number of metamorphoses in the delivery system since that time. And so I think there's legitimate questions about how current that is and how applicable that is to this particular bill. There also has been information put out by the OSBA. Well, all of us know that the OSBA has a giant straw in the trough, and they have obviously got a vested interest in the outcome of this. So there are reasons to look at the objectivity of that data. The Oregon Education Association has brought us a study where they compare a number of studies that have been done in other states that is very difficult to judge what the relevance of those studies are to this given situation too. And because of that, I think that there is legitimately an information void here. People genuinely have questions that they don't have answers to. It is, I think, very significant that no school districts or community colleges have come forth to support this. That they don't know the impacts is what we're hearing. We're hearing consistently that these people are very interested in saving money and being able to redirect money other places in the system, but we're also hearing very clearly that they aren't getting the information that they need from what is currently on the table to be able to make those judgments for their individual school districts. Many legislators are confused. I think that it's a fair statement to say that people are becoming more confused as these discussions progress and more of these issues are surfaced and these ramifications are explored. One of the functions of this legislative process is to decrease the uncertainty and increase the certainty around any concept that we're hoping to legislate. And I think that it's time to very seriously look at this issue from that perspective. There are many costs in this discussion that can be quantified. We can efficiently quantify the money that is on the table in the current administrative scenario that school districts are in and the administrative scenario that will be in place if a PEB-like structure is put in. Those are things that we can analyze and compare in a fairly straight across way with some good data that has some integrity to it. There are we can quantify issues around the size of the pool. I think there's legitimate issues about the savings that are available if we increase the size of the pool, considering the level of pooling that already is going on in Oregon. I think that that's something that would be easily quantifiable, and we could go out into the actuarial market and get some answers about what we could expect in terms of efficiencies and cost from increasing the size of the pool. We can quantify the cost of the issue relating to the part-time employees that are at or greater than half-time and what the impact that that has on the districts. We can quantify the cost of the hold harmless phase of the bill as it's implemented and what the costs are going to be for a PEB-like structure to implement that and what cost that's going to add to the overall cost of it. We can quantify the cost of the impact on existing coverage for retirees within the school districts and analyze that in terms of the benefits, the overall benefits of the bill. There are a number of things that are quantifiable here that would take us a long way to deciding whether this was a rational policy place to take the state of Oregon or not. And I very much agree with Senator Deckert that the shape of the coverage is going to be very difficult. But I think that there are many other issues that we can put to rest by taking a look at them. And I think that it is not a service to the people of the state of Oregon if we move this bill forward without having some third-party, disinterested person type study and analysis done on these kinds of issues. And with that, I'm going to turn it over, with the chair's permission, to Senator Morse so he can step us through the particulars of this conceptual amendment.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I formally move adoption of conceptual amendments to Senate Bill 426 for the following purposes. One, the Legislative Fiscal Office is instructed to work collaboratively with the Department of Administrative Services to conduct an analysis of the implementation costs and projected savings of developing an Oregon Educators Benefit Board based on data derived from the health benefit plans of Oregon school districts. The purpose of the analysis is to estimate the administrative savings and premium savings that will be realized by the system as a whole, including specific estimates for individual school districts during the implementation phase of the plan and at full implementation. The study shall apply the specific terms of this 2007 Annex in developing the financial analysis and shall be specific to Oregon, relevant Oregon costs. The study shall also review options and make recommendations on, if there are savings, how much of those savings should be used to reduce the employee share of premiums and how much of the savings should be available to transfer to the classroom. Second item. The Legislative Fiscal Officer shall enter into a contract with a person not affiliated with the Oregon State or with Oregon State or local government to study the costs and benefits of the Oregon Educator Benefit Board as described in Sections 1 through 23 of this 2007 Act. Number 3, the person retained to conduct the study as required by these subsections shall begin the study no later than August 1, 2007 and submit a report on the study, including recommendations, to the Legislative Fiscal Officer and the Department of Administrative Services by February 1 of 2008. Number 4, the analysis required by these sections will be provided to either the 74th Legislative Assembly in a special session or to the Emergency Board. If the analysis demonstrates budgetary savings from the establishment of an Oregon Educators Benefit Board, Sections 1 through 23 of this 2007 Act become effective upon finding by either the Legislative Assembly or the Emergency Board that the creation of an Oregon Educators Benefit Board is cost effective. Number 5, in addition to and not in lieu of any other appropriation that is appropriated to the Legislative Fiscal Office for the biennium ending June 30th, 2009, out of the general fund, an amount of $400,000, which the Legislative Fiscal Officer may expend for the purposes of carrying out the cost and benefit study required by the sections of this Act. Mr. Chair, colleagues, I would move this amendment for your consideration.
Okay, Senator Morse and Representative Morgan made a motion to adopt a conceptual amendment. Is there discussion?
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an issue that causes me a lot of heartburn. I've heard a lot of things here today, and a lot of material that I've received over the past week or so since this issue has been on the agenda. For one thing, right now, just quickly and simply, 70% of the, approximately 70% of the material that I'm receiving is against the measure. And I have yet to receive from, and I recognize I'll probably be inundated with it tomorrow now, from my home district, from any of the members of the education community, the teachers, classified staff, etc., any letter of support. I did receive a number of letters of opposition or emails of opposition. I'm perplexed by that. Until I consider some of the testimony that we've had today, Michael Dembo from the community college, Portland Community College, made the observation that bargaining under an OSBA environment is very difficult. I'm struck, and it bothers me, this bothers me, that we may be making or proposing here to make monumental and huge public policy changes based on conflict that may exist, and I would submit natural conflict that may exist between two very dedicated and diligent groups representing somewhat different needs and interests at times. I've heard in the committee discussion that rising costs of health care, something that we have to take care of, that they're increasing at astronomical rates, and I certainly will not disagree with that statement. However, I think as far as the rising costs of health care, if this committee passes out this bill under the assumption that something we do in relationship to health insurance is going to get the cost of health care under control, we're making a very, very serious mistake. There are some things we can do to bring the cost of health care under control as a legislative body if we want and have the courage to do it. We can legislate some healthy living agendas. We can outlaw smoking in the state of Oregon, not just in our bars and restaurants, but just period, end. There's absolutely no question, I think, that that would not save us millions and millions of dollars in health care costs. We can advance that further, and I and one or two, and only one or two other members of the committee are, I feel comfortable speaking about this. We can talk about the waistline, and we can put premiums on for excessive weight. And I plead guilty, and if you do it, I'll be.
Representative Jensen, are these amendments to the amendment?
Speaking to them.
Okay, all right. All right.
I'm merely referring to if we want to get hungry
as we go along. So.
Well, I know. I'll get off of that right. Then.
Okay.
Well, this body could have, if they're interested in health care costs, they could have passed in the previous session the fluoride bill. which would significantly reduce health care costs in America. Not just dental costs, health care costs in America. I would be more comfortable with the bill and with the proponents of the bill had they taken the data that's presented to me, and I know to all of you, from the various and sundry school districts around the state, and had they taken their model of what they want to do and taken that specific data and used it to show me that it was going to be less. No one. And I have absolutely, maybe there's a school district out there that it's going to save money, but I have no indication in the data I get and I've received that that is the case. That's scary to me. Therefore, Mr. Chair, long ways to get there.
That's right.
Therefore, I would submit that the Morris Morgan, the M&Ms, amendment is an appropriate amendment to place this out for a more objective study before we proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Okay, so there's a motion on the table. Senator Morris and Representative Morgan have a motion to adopt a conceptual amendment, and why don't we just go ahead and have the staff do a vote count.
Sure.
Senator Schrader?
No.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Deckard?
No.
Senator Starr?
Yes.
Vice Chair Devlin?
No.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
No.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Galizio?
No.
Motion fails. Okay, the conceptual amendment fails. Okay, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 426.
Representative Barnhart has moved the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 426. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. This amendment makes three changes. The first one is an extremely minor change on line 10 of page 7, adding the word only to that sentence. The second one is a much more important one because it replaces the language on the same page on lines 27 and 28. The current lines would tend to imply some change in the collective bargaining relationship between districts and the employees of the districts. The language that we propose to insert makes it completely clear that no change is contemplated by this bill. Then the final change adds a one member of the management of a management employee member to the task force on teacher health benefits and increases the size of that task force from 5 to 6.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Discussion. Any questions? Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, with great respect, because there is currently nothing in this bill that I think is very good, I will also be a no vote on the A5s and the A6s.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Very, very briefly, I think this is an important amendment because one of the positions that I've taken right along on this bill is that we want to maintain the local control relationship between the employees and the boards of the various districts and not make changes in that relationship. This amendment, I think, does that. It also improves the balance on the and the capacity of the task force. So I consider it a very small but valuable amendment.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Any other discussion? Okay, just keeping in mind with how we've been going, why don't we, will the staff do a vote count on the motion for the A6 amendment for Senate Bill 426A?
Senator Schrader?
Yes.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Deckard?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, the A6 motion carries. Representative Edwards?
Mr. Chair, I move that the LC-A5 amendment be moved to Senate Bill 426.
Representative Edwards has moved the dash A5 amendment to Senate Bill 426A. Representative Edwards, could you give us a brief description?
Yes, this bill accomplishes three things. Firstly, it clarifies that districts not exempt from the bill are obligated to join the statewide board only when their current collective bargaining agreements expire. Secondly, it specifies that all districts not exempt join the statewide program by October 1st, 2010. And lastly, it adds a district management employee to the task force that will report back to the legislature on the relative success of the board.
Thank you, Representative Edwards. Are there any questions on the A5 amendment? Are there any objections?
No question.
Oh, just one. Didn't we just add a management person to the task force?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert. Yes, there were two competing versions of that amendment, and I believe in this case that Amendment-A5 should take precedence over Amendment-A6 in this regard.
The preferred language.
Oh. That's wonderful.
Yeah, you know, Senator Decker, just for clarification, that on page 3, lines 10 to 14, that would supersede the language in the A6 amendment. So it's just, it's a question of how it was phrased. The different language was employed. So,
so if it works,
it was more of a drafting consideration. I think I'll explain that to us. My apologies. Are there any questions, any objections? Well, why don't we, Senator Starr.
Objections.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and do a, unless there's further discussion, we'll do, will the staff please do a roll call vote on the A5 Amendment 426A.
Senator Schrader?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Deckert?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Motion carries.
So the A5 amendment to 426A, motion carries. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Bill 426A as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Devlin has moved Senate Bill 426A as amendment as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Jensen.
Mr. Chair, just to note again that I will support moving the bill out of the sub here, but I make no guarantee or promises to what I will, how I will vote in the full ways or on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Further, Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to align myself with the comments earlier from Representative Morgan, Senator Morris. You know, I've been around this process long enough to see this issue for the last three sessions as well. And the data that we have today is no better than the data we had in 2003. And we're making these decisions. I think they're going to have wide-ranging impacts without really knowing what the impacts are going to be. I think that's dangerous. I also think it's dangerous when the legislature moves in a fashion and manner like this, this kind of far-reaching initiative, and it comes out on a party line vote. I think that that's dangerous, and I recognize that the process that we enjoy here, but I think the best policy is policy where Republicans and Democrats work together to come to a compromise and come to common ground. And I think that this is an unfortunate situation. I think Senator Deckard mentioned that, you know, before we knew where everybody was on this issue, it was more fun to work on it. The reality is we know everything, where the interests lie on this issue. We've known that for a number of years, and we should not be surprised, quite honestly, that a union back measure is moving forward here. And I'm very concerned, quite honestly, with the testimony that we heard just this afternoon. from a representative from David Douglas School, the potential reason 25 master's degree teachers if this moves forward. You know, we don't have good information that says that's not true. We don't have great information that says it is true. And yet we're moving forward. And that kind of information from David Douglas could be replicated 198 times, because I haven't heard from the district that supports what we're doing here today. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think it's sad, and I think it's not good for I think the future of the state of Oregon. I understand the fact that the legislature will be back next year and the year after that, and have the ability perhaps to oversee this process as it moves forward. But I think we're making decisions today based on really no information, and I think that's dangerous and it's sad.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Deckert has been the lead on this issue for many years, and I've followed this issue and have literally read all the materials on both sides. There have actually been three studies. To my knowledge, although there might be disagreements about the interpretation of those studies, all three studies have concluded that there would be administrative savings by pooling. I felt it was unfortunate that OSBA used the comparison between PEB and some future plan that might be created, simply because I recognize that there are differences in the demographics of the PEB group. There are differences actually in the plans being offered. One specifically that had not been noted in testimony is the newer rates under PEB include the mental health parity requirement, which we do know has some cost. I think there are a number of other differences. If you go to the OSBA website and you look at OSBA choice, you will see some language in there about in comparing plans you should be very careful, because all plans are comparing apples and oranges and you have to actually look at each plan. I came to a conclusion a long time ago, both in this process and in being on the Oregon Health Policy Commission, that something had to be done about health care. Now, longer solutions are being talked about in this building, largely by Senator Westland and Senator Bates. But in the short term, we have to address some of those costs. Some of those costs are real. The status quo is not acceptable. Everything I've seen in the Oregon Health Policy Commission, everything I've seen in these three studies, says pooling saves money. This year, we will budget so much for the state school fund. About $180 million of that increase in the state school fund, I will know, will go directly to increased health care costs. That's $180 million that does not go to classroom teachers, does not go to books, does not go to anything to actually better the education of those students. I think the legislature has a responsibility to find some way to bring down health care costs in the short term and to look at the needs to address our health care system in the long term. That's why I'm supporting this measure.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I very much respect the thought that has gone on here. And I respect the difficulty that we would have in comparing one health care plan to the other and the weaknesses of making a study based on that. But I do want to reiterate that there are significant things that we can quantify and that we can study that are supposed to have some kind of savings here, but we don't really know. The administrative costs of the system that's in place right now is eminently quantifiable. The administrative costs of a PEB-like organization is eminently qualifiable. And what the difference is between those two entities is also very quantifiable. The potential savings by increasing the cost of the pool is also very quantifiable. The impact of specific provisions of this bill on individual school districts is also very quantifiable. This is all information that would be extremely valuable to us and to the districts in deciding whether this is a reasonable and rational place to go or not. In the absence of that information, we're dealing with our perceptions of things. We're dealing with what we think is going to happen, not what we can with any certainty say is going to happen or isn't going to happen. I am very disappointed in the ways and means process in this building that we're walking away from our duty to quantify, to use an accounting process and come up with a comparison between where this bill takes us and where we are right now. And I'm very disappointed that we're passing this bill out of this committee without any kind of a data analysis relating to the impacts it's going to have, other than a very cursory look at the cost of starting up the benefit board. And with that, that's it for me.
Thank you, Representative Morgan.
Okay, before we take a vote, I just wanted to thank everyone on the committee, and more so I wanted to thank all of you that came to testify and also those who came before you. And I would just like to state, I think Senator Devlin, from my own perspective, Senator Devlin, in terms of the policy, I would align myself with his thoughts, and I'm a little frustrated. Reasonable people can disagree, but I'm a little frustrated to hear comments about the process not, you know, being one in which there had been sort of a thoughtful consideration of the issues. I think those of us on either side of this can come to different conclusions, and there is no sort of perfect information, and all of us are making decisions with trying to make the best decisions that we can with the information that we have, and some of us are more satisfied than others with the evidence. So I think there was absolutely. I just think we can disagree and come to different conclusions based on the evidence, and we can argue about the evidence, and that's what this is all about. And I think that's what we've seen here the last couple days and then the last sort of 6 years. And so I wanted to, again, thank the committee for all your articulation. And with that, the motion is to move Senate Bill 426A as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. And will the staff call the roll?
Senator Schrader?
Yes.
Senator Morse?
No.
Senator Decker?
Yes.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Devlin?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Chair Galizio?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Motion carries. And now carriers for the Full Ways and Means Committee. Senator Devlin, would you carry it to the
I'll carry it to the full, Mr. Chairman, but in respect, I would think either the chief sponsor or the policy committee that the bill came out of should be the carrier to the floor.
Senator Decker, will you carry it to the Senate floor?
Sure.
And I'm going to have Representative Arnie Roblin will be carrying it on the House floor per request. Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.